Good evening, James McCanny here with my Science Hour, and we are March 15th, 2012. Many, many, many topics to cover tonight. My main science topic, I have five comets that I will give commentary on at the main science topic, and a lot of interesting events this past week. Another solar flare about to hit Earth, or is actually hitting today, and it erupted about a day ago in very strange events, because NASA released this to the news media saying it was an X-class flare, an X5, which is a pretty big flare, when in reality, very clearly, on the solar monitoring stations, it was only an M-class flare, many magnitudes smaller flare. Still a CME, but the interesting part was it was absolutely certainly caused by a comet coming in. And NASA saw this comet coming with what they call the Swan filter, or Swan camera. It's on the SOHO satellite that observes the sun. And I talk about that all the time on the show, but the SOHO satellite has a camera specifically to look for comets. It has what is known as a Swan filter, which looks only at ionized water. So it's a very good filter, camera filter, for looking to look for comets. And this points backwards away from the sun. Well, they discovered this and announced this comet using the Swan filter on SOHO, which has a very wide field of view. You can see images from this camera on the internet. Just look up SOHO, S-O-H-O, and then Swan, just like the bird named Swan. And that filter, by the way, is named after the person who discovered the Swan filter. And it's very handy for astrophotography, for taking pictures of comets. There's some very famous pictures, and an astronomer using his own private equipment back in the 90s took many, many pictures of Comet Hale-Bopp, giving us an amazing view of that comet with sometimes 15 to 20 extending arms that are whipping around like snakes, and these are ionized shafts of water coming into the comet nucleus. But at any rate, the point is that, remember Comet Lovejoy? When was that? I talked and talked about that comet, the fact that it went through the solar atmosphere, came out the other side. Well, clearly, this comet was coming from the same region of the sky as Comet Lovejoy, but NASA now announces that it pre-discovered it. But they didn't announce it until it came into view of the sun. I guess not to forewarn people, astronomers, of the impending, or possibly to prevent amateur astronomers from discovering this comet, almost as large as Comet Lovejoy, not quite as large. But as this comet comes in and hits the sun, there's a solar flare, an immense one, and it's coming out, and that's the one that's hitting Earth now. And I want to read the, this is so funny to watch these guys. Here's spaceweather.com, the official NASA's mouthpiece for all things in space. So anyway, here they show the video of the comet hitting the sun, and clearly the big massive CME explosion coming out of the sun as the comet comes in and just right down at solar surface level. Here's what they say. They just try and liquidate this concept that comets are affecting the sun. It says the comet's death plunge comes just as the sun has unleashed a strong solar flare and radiation storm around. Okay, so they say, they don't even say it's coincidence anymore. They just say that the comet just happened to be there at the same time that the solar flare occurred. It was just coincidence, you know. And they say it was from the same group of comets that Comet Lovejoy is coming from, had come from in December of 2011. And here you got your expert, Carl Battams of the Naval Research Laboratory in Washington, the official, also kind of the mouthpiece for NASA. So NASA doesn't have to say anything, and they run, the Naval Observatory runs kind of a comet page to give the official dirty snowball hype and spin. So at any rate, the foolishness just continues. But the CME that came out of the sun also produced a major proton storm. And so that, in fact, has been hitting Earth, has been ongoing over the past day. So it's not a pulse of relativistic protons, also called cosmic rays. And by the way, the sun in its 6,000 degree black body radiation style should not be putting out cosmic rays. Okay, so anyway, the standard science foolishness continues. But I want to say this. I think, it's my belief, that this spring something major is going on. What are the indicators? Well, we have known, or I have known for many years, what the indicators are. First of all, look at the major mainstream daytime, big-time talk show hosts. They're not talking about anything. They're talking about topics that were old 3 years ago. There's nothing going on. The news is quiet. It's like that old Western where the good guys are sitting there and the bad guys are up in the hills waiting for them, and it's kind of a standoff, and one of the good guys says, "It's too quiet for my liking," and then all of a sudden all the shooting breaks out. That's what I think's going on right now. The big guys who control are getting ready for this place to come apart in pieces. And the plans are all in place, and, you know, as they always are, the best laid plans of mice and men out there. But I think they're getting ready for the final demise of what we once called the United States. And here is what I'm thinking, and I've said this before. What is the one thing that would take down the entire United States? Well, pull the plug on the electric. So here is NASA, at the same time as this flare is coming out, they're pumping the idea that a massive solar flare could shut down, with geomagnetic storms, could shut down our grid, our electric grid. Well, that is very unusual. Here we have a comet coming in, hitting the sun, obviously causing the solar flaring. That same group of comets coming in from the south. Gee, the south. What I've always said is that's the beginning entourage of the big guy. And I don't have data on anything major coming into the solar system, by the way, in terms of comets or Planet X type objects. But this just seems all too fishy. And then you have NASA continually, and I started broadcasting on this way last summer and before, that NASA is pumping this idea of major solar flares taking down the grid system. So basically they're setting up the public, they're setting up the story so that when a relatively big storm hits, boom, they can pull the switch. And voila, there goes the United States power grid. And when this happens, and I predict it's going to happen, when this happens, look for a couple things. First of all, it's not going to affect all areas of Earth. Some places are going to be just fine. Nothing happened. Why would the United States be affected and other adjacent places not be affected? I would expect Canada and Mexico to go along with this, but in a lot of respects, Canada is not real big on doing stuff with the United States. I remember when they tried to get Canada and rope them into helping pay for our space program, and Canada said, "No, we're not paying for your space program, because we would be in the back seat, we'd be third party, fourth party at best." And so Canada didn't bite on that hook. And so the Canadians are not real sweet on American deals. You know, car deals, fishing deals. All of those things, the Canadians are not real hot on the U.S. and collaborating with the U.S. So I would almost expect that, and Canada really depends on electricity. Canada produces a lot of electricity through hydro, small hydro dams all over. So they produce a lot of electricity and sell a lot of that to the United States. So this is what I would predict, that Canada would still have its electrical grid, it would still be operating relatively normally, and here across the border, the United States has got all the power switches shut down. So that's something major that I would look for. Everything's fine in Canada, not fine in the United States. And very simply by listening to radio and putting other things together, you would soon be able to find out that that's what was going on. But that's my prediction. There might be, who knows, a bio event, try and blame it on Iran. They need an event to go into Iran. Obama has been soft-shoeing it over there. He's put carriers over there, the typical scenario before an attack, like they attacked Iraq, this typical thing. But there's a little problem. Russia and China both, and as far as I know, India and Pakistan have said, don't attack Iran, because they're buddies. And Russia gets a lot of oil from Iran. So they're not real keen on the U.S. going in there and doing another attack. And so the other part of it is, Russia has supplied Iran with some of the latest and best radar equipment in the world. And so the standard scenario where the Israeli jets supplied by the U.S. and the U.S. jets go in and bomb the radar targets ain't going to happen. A lot of those planes aren't going to come back. And they know it, and so that initial airstrike is not going to be successful. The U.S. drone fleet, of course, is already compromised. They know that. And a lot of the U.S. High-tech electronics, drone remote control equipment, is compromised. And so then you have to depend on ground troops going in, and it ain't going to be pretty. It ain't going to be a clean sweep like going into Iraq. I remember when Dan Rather went into Iraq with the troops back in the early 90s, the first Iraq war. It was just like a train about 80 miles long of Humvees and all-terrain vehicles, military-style all-terrain vehicles. And then you saw some tanks shooting at some buildings there, and there was no resistance, because all of the Iraqi equipment had moved over the border into Iran, where it's still sitting. So, yeah, the U.S., with all its broken-down equipment from 10 years of war in Afghanistan and in Iraq, it's all broken down. They haven't replaced it. All the profits have been made, and all of our equipment is pretty much broken down. So, a land war in Iran ain't going to go real well, and all of the mill boys know it, and they don't exactly want to go charging in there because little Obama decides that that's what should happen. And, of course, Obama doesn't decide anything. He's a marionette. He's a puppet, at best, of the world bankers. So, at any rate, okay, so enough of that. But I'm predicting this spring the bottom is going to fall out of this baby. And also associated with this seems to be this underlying current of comets coming in from the south hitting the sun. And I won't say any more. I'm not making any predictions of Planet X. But also May is the time when all the crazies come out. So I would expect a full fleet of government-supported crazies running around, jumping up and down, talking about Planet X and filling the airwaves with garbage. So it's just, you know, this is the kind of scenario that I see building. And we're right now at the beginning of March, or kind of mid-March. We're mid-March. What am I talking about? But I see that coming this spring. And the other indicator, as I started talking about, the major daytime big, whopping big talk show radio hosts are not talking about anything. They are not talking about anything. So what does that tell me? Something is just a little too quiet. It's like that old Western. It's just a little too quiet for my liking. And I think, we're in for a rocky road this spring, along with food costs going through the ceiling. If you still have to go to the grocery store to get your food, you're in big trouble, folks. So, the only thing I can tell you is try to get in a position where you have your own source of food. Okay, and then I'm talking about basic foods. So, let's see. Just a second. I have a pile of notes on my page here for my show. You wouldn't believe all the small little side notes and sub-notes. Today's show has a tremendous amount of material in it. Okay, I have a small note here. It's an analogy that I've been thinking about, and like everybody out there, I have friends and people, acquaintances that I know. I was surprised to find out one of my good friends went through a short sale of his house. This guy was a realtor, and so has access to housing and all kinds of things, and so he lost his house, had to do a short sale. But at any rate, the level of loss of housing in this country is staggering. Now, first of all, this was all planned. It's not some kind of economic cycle that all of a sudden, oh, we had an economic cycle and the interest rate changed. No, this was all planned. People sat in offices, colluded with the government to set up programs whereby the average citizen in the United States would lose their house. The flurry of bad loans written to people who did not qualify, which started that first wave of foreclosures, and once that first wave hit, it's like a tsunami, a financial tsunami hitting. Then came the second wave, the people who could afford homes but wanted to sell their home and couldn't. The only way out was foreclosure or short selling. Their loans were upside down. And then you had the other factor where banks, this was another Obama deal, where he put a date in December of 2010 for all credit card companies to do, it was billed as being for financial reporting responsibility, where they had to report if they were going to, and they couldn't just raise your interest rate without a two-month notice. So what do all the banks do? They raise everybody's interest rate to the maximum amount, 23% up to 26%, and then hold it there. So all of the banks did this. So this was, once again, government looking like they're going to help you, defending the public, when really it was collusion with the bankers to drive credit card, which is one of the big U.S. debts, is personal credit cards, up to the ceiling where people simply can't pay. Remember Bush prior to that, they set up laws making it almost impossible to get bankruptcy. Well, gee, that was the writing on the wall if you couldn't see it. And so anyway, what I want to talk about tonight is an analogy between a trapper, a guy that goes out into the woods and sets a trap, and the animal, the unsuspecting, hungry animal, goes, and he's so hungry that he sees that, and then, of course, the trapper knows that if he puts really good bait there, the animal is going to be trapped because that animal is hungry. He's so hungry he will take a chance on getting that food and then, of course, fall into the trap. And the trap is designed so that if he just touches that food, bam, he's trapped. And so I want to make that analogy between trappers and trapped animals and bankers, and not only them, but attorneys and the whole laundry list of real estate agents and other agencies that have sprung up around the collapse of the housing industry. And in the end, the attorney, what does he do? He's not there to help you. He doesn't take your case and say the banks and the government colluded irresponsibly and illegally to turn this housing market upside down and sue them. No, he helps cut and parcel you so they can eat you. That's what the attorney does today. The attorney doesn't help you, and then you're supposed to pay him a few $2,000 to $5,000. so that he will help you out. Well, that's not help. And so the attorneys are part of the problem, and how many attorneys would have work if it weren't for the public? This is John Q. Public, who would never go to that attorney in a normal economy. He would never go to that attorney. So this generates work for the attorneys. And so, like I say, the real attorney would go back and sue the government and would sue the banks for collusion, illegal activity, turning the market upside down. But it's just agreeing with the banks that it's your fault. No, it's your fault. Why should the homeowner take the hit on all of this, you know, $50,000, $100,000, $250,000 where the house value is below the loan value? Why should the individual on all of these cases take that hit? And why do the attorneys then come in and parcel you out and cut you up into pieces, either through a bankruptcy or through a short sale of your house with the realtors involved or whatever? And all of this is set up. Then the government comes in and says, we're going to have a program to help homeowners. Well, gee, they announced this to the banks, and what did the banks do? The banks went out and rewrote all the loans to be rewritten after the closing date for the Obama Make Home Affordable program. So what do? Obama sets the date as January 2009 and doesn't tell anybody that until the banks, after that date, have gone out and rewritten millions of loans. And then, oh, you don't qualify for the Obama Make Home Affordable program. It's all collusion, fixing, and absolutely illegal. But what does the attorney do? No. He tries to set you up and divide you up and cut you up into more pieces, and so that it makes it palatable and legal for you to be consumed and have the one most important thing in your life be taken away from you, the family home. And so this is on such a massive scale today. And every person out there thinks, oh, gee, I'm part of this financial collapse. The news media says, the economic turn. We're just at the corner of turning up on the economic scene. And people, there's a few people that still maintain jobs, but let's talk also just about medical. The cost of medical for seniors should be going down, not up. Just take an example of a common exam that most seniors have to get. Let's take a common medical exam. I won't name any, but they run between $2,000 to $3,000. These are common medical exams that are basically suggested by the medical community, and whereas a dental cleaning, and these medical operations don't require any more facilities, equipment, or specialization than a dental cleaning and dental exam by a licensed dentist. A licensed dentist, and along with cleaning by a practitioner, runs around $150. Okay, and it takes about a half hour to 45 minutes. Let's take your average medical exam. Costs $3,000 or more if you have other lab work associated with that. What's with this? In a country where, okay, so what happens? Not many people can get these exams, so the equipment sits there idle for a good part of the time. Instead of operating that equipment at capacity, bringing the price down to where it should be, $150, and then more people would have access to this. But it's a reverse cycle. It's a cycle in which medical costs are going through the ceiling for routine exams and medical just medical procedures. Excuse me. But you compare it to something like a dental cleaning, it's not any more complicated. It doesn't take any more skill. But the AMA has this thing locked up. And who's the victim here? The senior, the cost of taxes on housing should go down for seniors. 50% of most housing taxes goes to schools. Well, seniors don't have kids. They've already paid their share for schools. Why should they be footing the bill, and especially for boatloads of people coming into this country from foreign countries in vastly increasing numbers, and mainly those people come in and have 5 to 10 kids and are using the school system. This is draining the seniors, and there's, of course, Congress and the legislatures of the states are culpable for doing this, for setting up this scenario, and the end result is that seniors are just financial complete, I would say it, complete financial collapse of the people in this country. So at any rate, I want to get off of that. Why am I talking about that on a show for science? Because the main daytime, big, highly supported daytime talk show hosts, radio talk show hosts, are not talking about this. So I have to spend my radio show time covering these topics. And once again, the analogy of a trapper and an animal. Make no mistake, the housing collapse was planned. It was planned, and all the way out to the, and everybody just falls in line, all the way out to the attorneys who should be taking in mass and suing the banks, suing the government, and reversing this illogical and absolutely incredibly criminal destruction of the American society. But make no mistake, this was designed to rob the American hard workers, and it's a Christian ethic that came out of Europe to rob these people of basically their birthright and everything they've owned and worked for, and everything their kids will ever work for, everything their ancestors ever worked for. Okay, on to the topic of science. First of all, I have to make mention, too. Okay, I, on my webpage, have water filters. And recently, I believe back last December, I name-branded water filters products, equivalent quality, the same exact quality products, but under my own name brand. Since then, and in around, I'd say, mid-February, and these things are hard to watch. Sometimes you find a little bump, and there's a lot of ordering, and you go, oh, that was interesting. But what's happened, and I think it's a result, we can't really figure out why, is possibly a result of national programs telling people to become prepared. But the what originally looked like a bump in rise in the ordering of gravity water filters has not subsided. In fact, it's increased. And so the end result is that we are back-ordered on many of the items. I think the one thing that we do have are the plastic filter. Anything that has a plastic housing, we have in stock. But the others with the metal containers, also the mini travel filter, we have lots and lots of those with the new 5-inch candle filter element. But the bigger stainless steel products we will be getting in around the end of this month in quantities, and have ordered quite a bit more to sustain what appears to be an increasing level of purchasing. And these are difficult to predict. So all I'm saying is, number one, if you're ordering, and this is industry-wide, it's not simply me, this is industry-wide, and these products are, like I say, difficult to predict, and we've seen these things before, but it looks like this wave of ordering is going to be sustained. So what I would tell you, if you have ordered, we have products coming in at the end of the month, many people, we have substituted other products, equivalent products, and sent them out. But then there's people who simply, we've run out of everything. And so the big orders that are coming in by the end of the month will fill those, plus we'll have plenty in stock for the future. So what I would tell you is if you have ordered and not received your product, plus we will be contacting any of these people individually, excuse me, regarding these issues. But if you are planning on ordering, and we saw this before with the food when I sold the Mountain House freeze-dried food. We saw this in my advice at that time and also now with the gravity water filters, is get in line. Get in line now. If you're going to order, if you're thinking about ordering, we do have the products coming in, and they would be shipping in about, I would say, early April. But put your order in now to get in line, because if you wait till we have products in, everything we have in at that time possibly will already be sold, and you will be farther out in line. And I wouldn't go through this spring myself, Mr. John Q. Public and his family, without my own personal gravity feed water filter. It's just the primary thing that you need, plus you use it every day. It's not something you stick in the closet and use once in a while when there's an emergency. This is something you use every day, like your car, like your toothbrush, like toilet paper. It's something you use every day, and it's just the way it is. It's the most used item in my house, and when I go on trips, I take it with me. So I don't want to get stuck someplace without the ability, my own ability, to have clean, fresh water. You can do without a lot of things, but that's one of them. I don't care who you are. I don't care what bankroll you have. I don't care how many credit cards you have. I don't care if you're the king or the queen. I don't care if you're the poorest guy on the planet. The one thing you need is clean water every day. So there's something for everybody there. And so what I would say is if you're thinking about getting a gravity feed water filter, order now. And it's not like you're going to go someplace else and get anything. This is industry-wide. And I think it's going to increase just because people are waking up in larger and larger numbers. Couple that with the 2012 hysteria, which I believe is all false hysteria, this December thing. I think if we get to December, we will be really, really lucky. I think it's the whole shooting match is going to come down this spring. So at any rate, be that as it may. Okay, that's the story on the water filter. So once again, we have a large number or volume of products coming in to sustain orders, and those will be here towards the end of March, and so we'll be filling orders through early April. But the way things are going, I suspect that a lot of what is coming in addition to what is already accounted for, will already be sold by the time those products hit the warehouse. So don't wait till April to order, because you will be then waiting another month or more possibly until more products come in. And we're trying to keep these things ramp up and keep ahead of things, but these markets are very difficult to predict. So at any rate, that's the story. Okay, on to, I got five comments I want to talk about. Excuse me. The first one I already mentioned. It was a comet that came in yesterday and hit the sun, actually 2 days ago on the 13th. Came in, hit the sun, and around the borderline between the 13th and the 14th caused a huge solar flare. That solar flare is hitting Earth today. And of course, the mouthpieces, the standard mouthpieces, spaceweather.com. I have to laugh at these people, how brazen they are, that these comets are continually hitting the sun. And at first they would say, oh, that was just coincidence. And now the way they put it, it just happened to be there when this massive solar flare came out of the sun. It's like, these people are walking morons. That's the only thing that's the best thing I can say about it. You can go downhill from there. Okay, so at any rate, that's the first comet I wanted to talk about. The next comet is a comet that most people don't know about, would never hear about. This comet has a designation of C2010U3, and these are just astronomical terms that are used to catalog a comet, 2010U3. And this comet was discovered the farthest distance from the sun of any comet in history. Now, I remember in my early papers and when I was dealing with comets in the 1970s and I was at Cornell and I was digging through their libraries, one of the things I wanted to know was what was the farthest comet from the sun? How far was it from the sun when it was first discovered? And it was actually a comet that occurred in like the 1800s. And it was one of the biggest comets in history as it came through the solar system. It was 1863, something like that. It was called the Great Comet, but it was discovered way beyond Saturn. And this thing exploded into brightness, and so in the 1800s, we're not dealing with what you'd call, they didn't have the Hubble telescope. You know, this was just average equipment. Amateurs today have better equipment than they had as professionals in the 1800s. So this was discovered in the 1800s around, it was beyond the orbit of Saturn, which is about 9 astronomical units. Okay, so let me describe or define an astronomical unit. It's something used by astronomers to give measurements, kind of like a yardstick of outer space. It's the distance, the average distance between the sun and Earth, around 93 million miles. That is an astronomical unit. It's kind of like a yardstick we can measure. The comet I'm talking about now, let me first describe the previous record comet distance from the sun when discovered, was that comet, I think it was 1863 it was discovered, was around 9 astronomical units, 9. So 9 Earth distances, or about a little bit beyond the orbit of Saturn. The comet that was discovered in 2010 was twice that far. It was 18.36, to be exact, 18.36 astronomical units from the sun. Now, to see something, of course, there was good equipment, but this was ground-based equipment discovered in a automated search. And most comets today are discovered in automated searches. There are so many government-supported cameras, good telescopes with cameras, and they're out there all night long, click, 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 taking pictures of the sky and then comparing it to previous, and all this is done by computers. And when something like a comet is discovered, well, it's something that wasn't supposed to be there. So the computer goes, hey, Mr. Astronomer, wake up from your nap here and come and look at me because I'm a new object. And so the astronomer goes over and looks. It's not like in the 1800s when somebody actually had to do something. Anyway, 18.36 astronomical units from the sun. Now, I want to describe the sun. What does the sun look like? If you were 18.36 astronomical units, this is about at the orbit of Uranus. What would the sun look like? How much sunlight and sun energy would be falling on you as this little couple mile across, allegedly, comet nucleus? The sun looks probably like a pretty dim flashlight. Say you were, in the woods and someone was about 100 yards away from you with a flashlight. That's about how bright the sun would be. You know, it's okay, yeah, there's an object over there bigger than the rest of the stars, so, you know, it's significant. You know, it's significantly noticeable, but in terms of energy, No, you're not going to light any fires with the sun out there. You would need an awfully, awfully, awfully big magnifying glass to start a match on fire at that distance. And so, by the dirty snowball comet model, how do you excite a comet to vent its alleged ice or whatever at that distance from the sun. Well, it's ridiculous. It's beyond ridiculous. It's more fairy tale science. It's wishful thinking by standard science. That's all I can say. And I like my term fairy tale science because once upon a time there was a story about an ice ball, and it lived in the far reaches of the solar system. And NASA scientists could say anything they wanted about it because they were publishing in peer-reviewed journals that really weren't peer-reviewed because they could just publish whatever they wanted. And the good thing about it was for them, nobody could ask them any questions. Nobody could question them. Nobody could ask real questions because none of the scientists in the loop would ask questions because they'd all lose their paycheck. So anyway, that's fairy tale science, Mother Goose at its best. Okay, comet number two. Okay, that's two comets I've talked about. I want to talk a comet here, T2011P1. This comet, not very, once again, not something anybody would have noticed, not certainly nothing the public would have known about, interacted with Jupiter. Now, a couple weeks ago, I talked about the scenario of Venus coming into the solar system and losing its energy. How did Venus, the comet that was captured by Jupiter, and there are indications that the ancients actually saw that comet prior to being captured by Jupiter because there were names associated with that particular item. But it came in, captured by Jupiter, and dropped into a lower orbit. In other words, that interaction, that gravitational interaction with Jupiter, dropped it into a lower energy orbit into the inner solar system. And then it began, as a large comet, to pick up matter, which slowed down its orbit, dropped it into a lower orbit, causing eccentricity dampening and orbital circularization. Those are the two terms, astronomical terms. Basically means it's changing its elliptical orbit into a circular orbit, and in the process losing energy and dropping into a circular orbit. And as I said, that comet Venus, I estimated, took about 600 years, and that's the time when the Mayans, the early Mayans, remember I talked about the difference between the early Mayans and the more current Mayans. The early Mayans lived in that epoch of around 1500 BC. That period of the comet becoming the planet Venus probably occurred in between about 2000 BC and around 1500 BC, somewhere in that time frame. And those are the Velikovsky estimates, and I like those, although there are some questions involved, could it have been earlier? But at the beginning, that's also the time frame of the Noah flood. We know from the Colburn that there were many big comets in the solar system at the same time. So we don't know which comet caused which disasters. On my CD set, I talk about the Noah flood, and I also talk about the Moses event. Both of them very much related to comet activity, but very different types of effects, and separated in time by possibly as much as 1,000 years, certainly 500 years. So anyway, the comet I wanted to talk about now, comet P2011P1, interacted with Jupiter. Jupiter put it into this interaction with Jupiter, put comet P2011P1, a small comet, into a larger orbit outside the orbit of Jupiter. And so this is something I just wanted to make note, that these kind of interactions are happening all the time, and this is the capture process at work. Sometimes the orbits get bigger, sometimes they get smaller. And that's the process. Jupiter has an entire family of captured comets. Saturn does too. Uranus does too. In fact, Earth has a few comets that it has helped capture. I've always said that our moon may have been here before we were. We always talk about the moon coming after Earth or something. somehow being a byproduct of Earth. Well, why couldn't the moon have been here before Earth? Totally 100% likely, possible. There's no proof that it wasn't. There's no proof that the moon had to come after Earth. When you're looking at a capture process, we really don't know. We don't have good history on that. And by the way, I'm just going to throw this in there. If you've been out in the evening sky and you've looked up in the west, you see Venus and Jupiter. Jupiter's actually the smaller of the two objects. If you have binoculars, take a look at those. You can see the moons of Jupiter very clearly. And then Venus, big, big and bright. Much brighter than Jupiter, but in a very close alignment there. At any rate, something if you go out. And by the way, tonight also, I announced last week, go out and look for auroras. Tonight would also be an excellent, excellent night to go out and look for auroras after it gets dark. Early in the evening, because the moon will not come up till after midnight. I don't know exactly when the moon is coming up now. But you have the early part of the night with just black skies. Actually, if you have a cloudless sky, then just go out and look at the stars. Excuse me. And look at look for the auroras, because they should be hitting Earth. And we could have a very good solar flaring activity that would cause auroras in your area. And this could be pretty far south in the United States. We never know how these things are going to react or how Earth is going to react to them. All we can tell you is that, yep, it's here. Go look for it. The fourth comet I want to talk about was actually an asteroid. It was designated as 596 Sheila, S-H-E-I-L-A, an asteroid. And all of a sudden, last year, it decided to become a comet. And so it was a comet for a while. And of course, what's the standard explanation? Oh, it was hit by an asteroid. Something else hit it. And so I was like, all of these things get hit by other objects out in outer space just at the right time. More fairy tale science, just to maintain that dirty snowball comet model. But this comet, by the way, didn't have much water in its tail. It had mainly dust. And so at any rate, the common explanation is that something hit it, caused it to become a comet for a month or two, and then all of a sudden went back to being an asteroid. Well, the reality is that what happens is the object induces the discharge of the electrical capacitor around the sun. And these things are happening all the time. It's just that they're hard to observe, and every now and then someone is looking at one of these asteroids just at the right time and sees that it has just decided to become a comet. But at any rate, in my very early papers, I talk about the fact that comets and asteroids are one and the same. It's just that most of the asteroids are in very near circular orbits, so they're not really discharging the solar capacitor as much as a comet or asteroid or rocky body or whatever coming into the solar system on a highly elliptical, coming in, diving in towards the sun at a much greater angle. In other words, not a circular orbit. The ones that are in more of an elliptical orbit are have a propensity to discharge the solar capacitor more. And it also depends on size. The bigger the comet nucleus, the more discharge that can occur, and then therefore the bigger once the discharge occurs, then that tends to grow based on, and apparently the size of the nucleus does have quite a bit to do with this. Simply because the charging that occurs on the comet nucleus also is dependent on the size of the nucleus. That charge sets up around the surface of the comet nucleus, and it's like a space charge that occurs. As the charging process occurs, this is part of the fact that in the electrical discharge of the sun, and the line with this nucleus, the electrons are the primary charge carriers, and therefore the nucleus charges up to a negative potential, and that's what draws in the positive ions in the ion tail and causes the negative ions to move out and away. So it's a very interesting process, and of course standard science looks at this and says, well, it's a dirty snowball. The dirty snowball model is a very, very simplistic model, and simply it doesn't work. It doesn't explain 99% of the observations of comets, yet it's something like, I always use the example of a car going down the street, and somebody sees the car for the first time, and somebody says, well, okay, you just saw this car for the first time, you've never seen a car before, what makes it go? And so the observer, the new person, looks and they see the car going down the street and they see some exhaust coming out the tailpipe and they go, well, it must be that impulse of exhaust coming out the tailpipe because that goes backwards and the car goes forward. So that must be the thing that causes the car to go down the road. And when in reality, it's way more complex than that. And if you really look at the evidence, the amount of gas coming out the tailpipe is nowhere near enough to make the car go down the road. So it breaks down on very, very rudimentary, cursory observation. But that's the person's first reaction. Well, that's what happened with the dirty snowball comet model. It's actually what Kepler talked about when he first realized he was doing his calculations, he was using Newtonian physics. He understood that the objects were far out, not in the atmosphere like Aristotelian philosophy he had taught, but that the comets were way out there. And so he said, well, gee, what could be out there that in the tail always points away from the sun? And so, gee, it must be that the heat from the sun is causing something. And so there, oh, it must be ice, and the heat from the sun causes it to evaporate. That's where that concept came from. Something initial, reaction from the Middle Ages, and it hasn't changed up till 2012 and going far into the future. Obviously, when you get up close to a comet nucleus, and it's black, and it's hot, and it has a tar, hydrocarbon, baked on its surface, and there ain't no water in sight, something is wrong with your ice ball comet model, or your dirty snowball comet model. Something is drastically wrong. When you get a satellite right up next to it, and you shoot a probe into it, and only dust comes up, and you look at the surface of that nucleus, and there ain't no water there, by a factor of 1,000, and not only is there no water there, but there's none coming off the nucleus to form the tail, that would indicate to the astute scientist that that ain't a dirty snowball. It never was, never could be, never would be. But after the silence breaks, then they come out and keep talking about the dirty snowball. They corrupt other data. They look from a distance and they go, well, there was a brightening seen from Earth with telescopes from Earth about the time that the probe hit, and they see a brightening of water around the nucleus, and they say, look at all the water production due to that item hitting the nucleus, when direct observation of the crater where that hit shows absolutely no water coming out at all. This is how data is doctored by NASA. That's why I guess they can call them doctors. All the doctors at NASA, because all they do is doctor the data. At any rate, okay, so that's the fourth comet I wanted to talk about. The comet that was an asteroid became a comet for a while and then turned back into an asteroid. Okay, the next and final comet I want to talk about, it's called C2009P1. It's called Comet Jarrad, after a guy in Australia who's a very avid comet watcher and discoverer. So this comet, right now, in fact, if you're out in your backyard with binoculars, you might get a glimpse of this comet, although it's not very easily observed. Mainly, you need some good telescopic photographic equipment, astrophotography equipment. But you can also, of course, go online and look up Comet Jarrad, G-A-R-R-A-D-D, and it's the specifically C2009P1. Just Google that, and you'll see lots of pictures. This comet right now is passing between us and the North Pole. Let me describe specifically where it is if you are an amateur astronomer. If you take if you start with the Big Dipper, okay, the Big Dipper has a handle and a ladle, the part that holds the soup, so to speak, the Big Dipper. Okay, if you start from the Big Dipper part, there are four main stars in the Big Dipper, in the ladle part. Okay, if you come out on the handle, it's the first star out on the handle. Okay, so that's one of your designator stars. Now go up to the North Star, and Comet Jarrad is exactly in the middle between those two. That's about where it is tonight. It's moved a little bit, but that's pretty close. Just move your binoculars around, and you'll see a little fuzz ball. And that's about all you're going to see with a pretty good set of binoculars. You'll need them on a tripod to stabilize the binoculars. But at any rate, that's where that comet is. The reason I wanted to mention this comet is because it's way up above the ecliptic. The ecliptic is the plane of the solar system where all the planets reside and orbit the sun. Except for Pluto, which is off a little bit. But most of the planets, the major planets, orbit the sun in that plane. And so something that I discovered and talked about in my early papers, in fact, is why do all the planets reside in the same plane? Well, it's kind of a gravitational effect. What if there was a planet which moved above the plane of the planets in part of its orbit, and then, of course, it would have to be down below the plane of the planets in the other part of its orbit? Okay, when it's above the plane of the planets, it's being pulled down by all of the planets that are in the plane of the solar system. And when it goes in the other half of its orbit and is down below the solar system, it is being pulled up. So over time, this effect tends to pull all of the planets into one plane. And it's a very slow, long-term effect. But it's a way for planets all to become localized in the same plane. Okay, so that's an interesting effect. One of the effects that takes place when you look at the solar system in terms of capture. I didn't realize it, but I'm out of time, folks. I will continue this topic next week. This is Jim McCanny. This is my Science Hour, and as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.